faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Battleground America podcast. What a crazy week, including folks, I've had technical difficulties this week. If you've missed the podcast, I am really sorry. I'm going to be better. We've just had several things internally that have gone on here that made it very hard to publish the podcast this week. I'm going to try to make up for it with this week wrap up. Let's get started. Insane thing number six, a genius level point from listener Ralph Casito. He writes in an email to me, three Democrat assassins were in court this week at once. Is that a world record? He writes, great point, Ralph. They include the beloved, at least by the left, Luigi Mangione, Tyler Robinson, and would-be Trump assassin Ryan Routh, who many people don't know had, at the time of the killing, on his truck, parked in his driveway in Hawaii, a Biden-Harris sticker. Yeah, right there on the bumper sticker. If the partisan equivalent happened, folks, the media would treat it as a slam dunk. Instead, they're still walking around pretending to be confused. No, he was a partisan assassin. In fact, as one person texted in this week, after I read Ralph's email on the air, it would be four liberal assassins if Thomas Crooks was still alive. Because remember, Andrew Torba, owner of Gab, who called the FBI over and over and over because he had archived Crooks' account. Gab is, of course, a very conservative site. But Crooks was a well-known liberal troll on the site, always defending Joe Biden, trashing Trump. And he said he called the FBI multiple times personally and asked them, hey, you want to come pick this up? It's great evidence in your case. They refused. He began doing interviews about having archived Crooks' account, which is how I know about it. I still don't know if the FBI ever picked it up. That's the Biden FBI, by the way. But folks, this nukes the both sides argument. There is simply no equivalent on the right. Never mind so many. They're all in court on the same day this week. When, by the way, the Democrat judges began the process of setting Luigi Mangione, a political prisoner, I'm sure that's how they see him, free. Did you catch what happened there? They dropped the terrorism charges. Yeah, here's the problem. The first degree murder indictment was based on the terrorism charges, which means he's now only charged with second degree murder, which is an absolute friggin' outrage. Second degree murder is generally unplanned, in the heat of the moment murder. First degree murder is pre-planned. The dude pre-wrote his manifesto before the killing. As we all know, those of us who've covered the courts, second degree murder carries a lot less time, especially if you have no prior record. Like Luigi Mangione, folks, I'm telling you, that guy isn't even going to have gray on his hair when he gets out, if they can even find a liberal jury that will all vote to convict him. I'm not sure they will. So that's only the first outrage, folks. As these judges, these liberal judges, get a hold of this case and they know how much the left loves Luigi Mangione, you're going to see all kinds of stuff aimed at getting him right out the door. Insane thing number five, Donald Trump finally declares Antifa a terror org. What's insane about that is that it took this long. Antifa notched its first kill in January of this year, murdering a Border Patrol agent in cold blood in Vermont. Having gotten away with that, with no organized federal interference, yes, the folks were arrested who did it, but the group was not pursued or investigated. Inspired by June, they'd assembled a cell of eight, led by a guy by the name of Benjamin Song, who figured they'd set off fireworks, fire bullets outside a Border Patrol building in Alvarez, Texas, and when the agents came out, they'd gun them down. The person who came out was actually a cop, and they plugged him full of bullets. Thank God he lived. In June, they tried to murder another Border Patrol agent. If you're a leftist who loves that kind of thing, it's totally inspiring. If you're a leftist like, I don't know, Tyler Robinson, who inscribed the word fascist on one cartridge, but Bella Chow on another. Bella Chow is the slogan used by the leader of Antifa who lives in Los Angeles. His film company is called Bella Chow. And yet, incredibly, it wasn't the Republican-controlled Congress that voted to designate Antifa a terrorist organization first. No, it was the Netherlands Parliament that voted to designate Antifa a terror org. By the way, they're very active in Europe as well. What that shows is the deep and wide effect of the assassination of Charlie Kirk. It didn't just rock a generation. And folks, we're going to see the effects of this for years. This will be viewed as a turning point before and after Charlie's assassination. The outcome of this is reverberating around the planet, is what this shows. Which leads to what I think is one of the two most insane clips of the week. It's a clip from Charlie's show. And it's as if he, folks, he could have given it this week in commentary on Antifa being declared a terror org were he still alive. It's prescient. It's almost as if he knew.
My fear, Senator, and I hope I'm wrong, and let's say stay in prayer that I'm wrong, that someone is going to get shot the same way that Steve Scalise got shot and, God forbid, killed. The left is creating a pressure cooker with so many of their rank and file paramilitary troops that very well might result in one of us getting shot or killed. God forbid that happens. We're getting death threats every single day here on the Charlie Kirk Show.
Like, how many death threats are we talking? The COO of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk's group, confirmed, listen to this, we've received thousands and thousands of death threats. Charlie never complained about them or lived in fear, he said. Our security detail, working with authorities, has thwarted dozens of serious threats, but he would never give up. He stared evil in the eye and tried to win them over. God, that's heartbreaking. Insane thing number four. Cash Patel this weekend, head of the FBI, for the first time, a director, a person in a leadership position of the FBI, admitted to the public something absolutely devastating in the congressional hearings this week. The FBI knew the whole time that the Hunter Biden laptop wasn't Russian disinformation. We sleuthed our way to that, but it's never been admitted by the agency until now.
What role did the FBI play in suppressing the Hunter Biden laptop story during the 2024 election?
I believe the FBI was in possession of verified information from that laptop, and it was improperly publicized that they did not have information and masked it as Russian disinformation. We now know that was categorically false.
Wait a minute. The whole time we were watching Trump's social media accounts locked down, Kayleigh McEnany's spokesperson's social media accounts locked down in the middle of a heated presidential campaign, and the New York Post's social media account frozen. The Post humiliated for breaking the story. The whole time, the FBI, tell me again, Director Patel.
The FBI was in possession of verified information from that laptop.
Yeah, here's the thing. During a week when the left is very fakely on TV, pretending to be living through censorship by a dictatorship, what a freaking joke. I'm going to get to Kimmel in a minute. The whole time that the FBI had in its possession, as he admits there, proof that what was on that laptop was real, i.e. it wasn't Russian disinformation. Remember what they were doing? Oh, they were the belly button, quote unquote. That's according to the Twitter files. They were censoring people, including people who said the truth, that that wasn't Russian disinformation, that it was Hunter's laptop, and i.e. the crimes on it then were real. That's why they had to tell the lie. It's astonishing when you think about it. The FBI had proof it was real, lied to the public that it was fake, but then took the extra step through its censorship backdoor, which they called the belly button, remember from the Twitter files, to censor anyone telling the truth. Now, that is actual direct government finger on the button censorship, something the Democrats have never lived through. Yet, incredibly, the Democrats scream bloody murder this week, pretending that because Jimmy Kimmel was rightly taken off the air by his private corporate bosses, that they were somehow living through a censorship dictatorship. The end of the First Amendment. Here's Senator Chuck Schumer describing that situation. Now, before I play this, I appreciate the irony here. Just 3 years ago, the same Democrats, including Schumer, on the same liberal networks, were all doing interviews advocating openly for censorship. Now, they're not even acknowledging they did that. They're pretending none of it happened. It's astonishing. It's like living in Orwell's America. Here's Chuck Schumer.
It is outrageous. It's a page right out of Xi's playbook. This is just despicable, disgusting, and against democratic values. Trump and his allies seem to want to shut down speech that they don't like to hear. That is not what democracies do. That is what autocracies do. And it doesn't matter whether you agree with Kimmel or not. He has the right to free speech. And so it is just outrageous. It is indicative of autocracy. And I am just outraged by it. Again, this is what dictators do. This is what Xi would do. This is what Putin would do. We are not that country.
But we are. Put the name Nina Jankowicz into Google, as I did, like right now. And it identifies her as former executive director of the Disinformation Governance Board of the United States, i.e. chief censor, on account of the Democrats flat out announced they were going to censor. Well, you know what happened with her this week? Yeah, she's crawled right out of her slimy little hole because she sued Fox News for libel for telling you exactly what I just said, that she was the intended chief censor. Well, she sued for libel, millions of dollars, and lost this week. Why? Fox used the best defense you can use in a libel and defamation suit. The truth. Yeah, the court threw the case out. Why? Because it was true. She was the intended chief censor. Anyway, she was outraged and spent the rest of the week whining on social media. But my point is, it means this happened. Now, the Democrats' argument is that since FCC Director Brennan Carr, Trump appointee, did some podcast saying that ABC should lose its license or something, that somehow that pressure or something caused Jimmy Kimmel to lose his job. Never mind, there are liberal liars on all of the rest of their stations lying around the clock, too. And never mind that even CNN's liberal commentator Brian Stelter admitted it's almost impossible to take away one of these broadcast licenses. It would go to court and the president would lose. He said it was jawboning just talking about it. But what's the actual truth? The actual truth is that Jimmy Kimmel is censoring himself by being truly awful. In January, he had 1.9 million monthly viewers. That's really crappy compared to a lot of the big comedians that are on YouTube right now who are getting way more views than he is. It's amazing anyone paid him at all instead of ditching him and hiring one of them. One of our family's favorite comedians, Gabriel Iglesias, averages about 10 million views per video. Some go up as high as 70 million views. Again, Kimmel in January was doing 1.9 million views. See, that's a problem. If by August, you're at 1.1 million monthly audience. Yeah, that's a 45% decline. Folks, I'm here to tell you, we live and die by Nielsen ratings too, and the radio industry is the same ratings book. You do that, it's a wonder you still have a job. You're at a minimum on probation at that point. But this was about money and ratings. Then it came out that this was not actually censorship. It was a smackdown by Disney's CEO Bob Iger and co-chair Dana Walden. According to Fox News reporter Elizabeth McDonald and Hollywood Reporter, they yanked Kimmel because he refused to apologize and planned on doubling down and going on camera to defend his lie that Tyler Robinson was, in fact, one of us, was MAGA. Something that had been well debunked by the release of the text by the time Kimmel lied about it.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
What's so astonishing is the hypocrisy here. Remember that clip a few minutes ago by Democrat Senate Leader Chuck Schumer about this is Chinese-style tactics if somebody gets deplatformed? allegedly thanks to, I don't know, some kind of vague political threat. That's Chinese-style tactics? Well, Schumer did the same exact thing with Tucker Carlson. Remember this?
These lies continue tonight. Rupert Murdoch has a special obligation to stop Tucker Carlson from going on tonight, now that he's seen how he has perverted and slimed the truth, and from letting him go on again and again and again. Not because their views deserve such opprobrium, but because our democracy depends on it.
So it's a threat to our democracy if Jimmy Kimmel is removed for sucking and defying his bosses, but also a threat to democracy if Tucker Carlson is not removed. Got it. And there's another problem. See, the reason Chuck Schumer might be really upset here is that Jimmy Kimmel was very useful to the Democrat Party. Remember this from 2017? Late night host Jimmy Kimmel got talking points from Senate Minority Leader, looky there, Chuck Schumer, as he prepared a series of monologues attacking the latest Republican effort to repeal Obamacare. According to the Daily Beast, Schumer's office provided technical guidance and information about the so-called Graham-Cassidy bill, as well as stats from various liberal think tanks and experts on the bill's effects. So see, that, folks, this is why this guy still had a job. Democrats protect these people. And folks, you know who the Democrats are that everybody really fears in these industries? It's the bureaucrats who don't go away, even when Trump's in office. That's why a person like Jimmy Kimmel wouldn't be fired. What is happening right now is that the culture is reverting to common sense, to capitalism. You can't make millions of dollars a year when people on YouTube have more viewers than you do, and you're losing money for the company. That capitalistic model doesn't last 5 seconds in the real market. The only thing keeping it together was fear of Democrats, fear of government regulators. Again, it's the same thing as Sydney Sweeney and American Eagle. That fear has evaporated, and the market is reverting to a culture of common sense. Meanwhile, as Democrats pretend to be the victims of a dictator that's censoring them or something, this headline ran in the National Review. State Department officially dismantles remains of censorship apparatus. Yeah, the Global Engagement Center. That's a National Review article. And the reason it took this long, because Marco Rubio defunded it as soon as he came through the door, is because they had all kinds of agreements, it turns out the State Department did, with foreign governments to help the U.S. government censor conservatives. What those agreements basically said is that they would use their laws to cover social media platforms that Americans were on. This was a massive apparatus. Do you know what else the Global Engagement Center did? This is really awful. They took money to demonetize platforms from the Daily Caller to Breitbart to the Federalist, and most especially X. In fact, in one of their quarterly reports, they bragged that they had demonetized all of those entities by $100 million through pressure campaigns levied at big advertising companies. In other words, hey, X might have the most hits, Breitbart might have millions of hits, but don't advertise there. Folks, when the federal government sends its proxies via the Global Engagement Center to make those kind of threats, people don't advertise there. Why? Because, again, they don't want to be punished by Biden regulators. Democrats ignored all of this as they whipped their sheeple into a frenzy. Folks, this is the kind of thing that terrifies the base, especially since they don't have any of the background I just gave you. And this is going to further push the notion that they live in a dictatorship, that the Iron Curtain is coming down around them. It's not. But this is exactly the kind of thing that terrifies the base and drove Charlie Kirk's assassin, Tyler Robinson, to put the word fascism on that bullet. The word Democrats use day in and day out. And incredibly this week, folks, and I knew they would not make it until this man is buried. They could not stop. And sure enough, a Democrat member of the squad went first, using the fascism word again. Rashida Tlaib did it in Congress, and she tried to couch it differently. Well, I'm not saying you guys are the fascists. No, it's just your, you know, Hitlerian tactics. Take a listen to that. It's the exchange of the week. Again, folks, Charlie Kirk isn't even buried. And the assassin who killed him etched the word fascist on that bullet. She knows exactly what she's doing. She's egging the mentally ill in the Democrat base. Self-admitted, folks. Again, that latest Gallup poll, 50% of Democrat women admit they have a mental health diagnosis. 30% of the men. She knows they know exactly what they're doing. Take a listen to this exchange in which she's calling us fascists for daring to, in D.C., arrest violent teenagers. And folks, these aren't teenagers shoplifting, okay? These are teenagers who've committed violent acts. And so, well, I'll just play it. This is incredible. And listen to how Byron Daniels challenges her. He's a black Republican congressman. The point being, folks, they couldn't even wait till Charlie Kirk was in the ground. They tried, but they can't. They cannot do it.
I think it's important, Mr. Chair, just like in D.C., home rule was won out of black freedom struggle in the fight for civil rights. We can't be passive right now. So nobody over there should take anything we say, so personally as if we're attacking them. No, we're attacking a process, not attacking people here. And I think it's really important. We need to stand up against this fascist takeover. That's not a bad word. It's a fact.
Will the gentlelady yield to a question?
Yeah, I think it's really important.
Will the gentlelady
yield?
No,
I don't yield. I don't even have time. I can tell you.
Your time's expired.
It is expired. But, Mr. Chair.
Chairman, I think it's insane if the gentlelady doesn't have an argument, but she's going to refer to me and some of my colleagues.
Mr. Donald,
we were from the Third Reich. This is insane.
You're going to look at 14, 15-year-olds as a bunch of criminals?
It's insane. Do I look like a member of the Third Reich to you, Ms. Tlaib? Is that what I look like to you?
You're the one taking your voting card.
Is that what you think? Is that what you think? Is that what you think?
No. That's unethical.
I think it's radical, and I think it's insane. And I'll respect everything that you say. But to say something like that to myself and all of my colleagues is way out of line. It's way out of line. It's way out of line.
Regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Way out of line.
Regular order.
That's okay. But it's okay, right?
That is not how it goes.
It's okay, right?
You hold yourself accountable before you talk about
Washington. Hold myself accountable. Hold your own self accountable. How about that? Hold your own self accountable. How about that?
Free D.C. And make sure you vote with your own voting card. Don't be giving it to somebody else.
Tlaib. All right, time. Chair Ricky.
Insane thing number three. After trying to paint Tyler Robinson, assassination of Charlie Kirk, as MAGA failed spectacularly, they moved on to casting the whole thing as really a beautiful love story of a gay man trying to protect his transgender lover, calling him love in a series of texts, confessing to being the shooter and saying he just wanted to protect him. They didn't get into protecting him from what? He meant being arrested for knowing about the murder. That's not exactly a love story. But to hear Montel Williams tell it, yeah, that Montel Williams. He's retired now, famous talk show host, but CNN dug him up to try to spin this angle in which Tyler Robinson, who's 22, is just a love-torn child. And Charlie Kirk, by causing Tyler Robinson pain and causing his lover pain, somehow earned his own death or something. Folks, of the more than 10,000 clips I've cut for this radio show and this podcast in my clip base over the last 11 years, this is in the top 10 most insane. Montel Williams, y'all.
Talking about a love-torn child, a kid. This is probably his first real relationship, and somebody was disparaging the person that he loved. He sat on that building for 30 minutes before he took the shot. Why did he wait until the first word trans came up? Then he took the shot.
You think he heard it? He could hear it?
I think he could hear it. I think he also, I don't believe he was motivated politically. I think this was motivated emotionally.
Guys, guys, the evidence here is overwhelming. He said, Charlie Kirk, I can't stand this hate anymore. I'm going to take him out. The testimony from him and the statements of his family, he had become more left-wing. He etched the statements that are made by the left about Republicans and conservatives and Charlie Kirk fascist on the bullet casings.
He made a joke about it in his last text.
Well, it doesn't sound like a joke to me because someone's dead.
I don't know how they got Montel Williams to beclown himself that way, but here's how you know that those were Democrat talking points. Matt Gutman, ABC News reporter, called that exchange touching, then waited two more segments and repeated the talking points. He must have drawn the short straw, doubling down on what a beautiful love story this was.
And then those text messages, and I don't think I've ever experienced a press conference in which we've read text messages that are A, so fulsome, so robust, so apparently, allegedly self-incriminating, and yet on the other hand, so touching, right? With the suspect reaching out to his roommate, who is his, allegedly his boyfriend, who we understand, identified as male at birth, now identifies as female. And the terminology he used, he was trying to protect him. He kept calling him my love. My reason for doing this is to protect you.
In the old days before Trump won re-election and we began to reclaim the culture, folks, I have seen us take control of the culture back, or at least be on equal footing on the cultural battlefield in these last 2 weeks for the first time in my adult life. It has come full circle. In fact, I would say culturally, we have had the upper hand this week. We've been ascendant. The Democrats have been descendant. I've never seen that in my life. It's always been assumed once the Democrats push the culture in a new and more perverted or grotesque direction, we could never come back. I believe that myself. I don't believe that anymore. Not after this week. Well, before Donald Trump's election, and with a large share of the popular vote, too, that probably would have flown. It's why he said it. But things are different. He was forced to apologize by the end of the week. Just more signs of a sea change in the United States of America. Insane thing number two. Insane thing number two. Arctic frost. Folks, just about everybody missed this. Remember how we were headed well down the avenue of Soviet Chinese style show trials with Donald Trump facing 700 charges across five cases, virtually guaranteed to spend the rest of his life in prison if it didn't unravel almost miraculously? Yeah, well, it turns out that was just phase one. Yeah, they were angling to put the rest of the Republican leadership, the conservative leadership of the conservative apparatus in this country, in prison. It had a name, Arctic Frost, and we found out about it this week. The fact that the FBI was surveilling 92 separate organizations, including Charlie Kirk's, the Heritage Foundation, and even the Republican Attorneys General Foundation, the entire backbone of the right-wing movement in America. And they'd managed to hide it from Republicans, even when they controlled Congress until now, when Kash Patel was able to extract it. Folks, they intended to put all of our leaders in prison. They were surveilling over 30 of them. These are heads of these groups, their personal devices. Here's Republican Senator Eric Schmidt describing the situation.
This was part of an effort by the FBI to go after conservative causes and leaders, including Charlie Kirk at Turning Point, as it turns out, including the RAG of the Republican Attorneys General Association, RGA, sort of the whole of Republican apparatus, the conservative movement. They had law enforcement out there snooping and trying to ensnare people into criminal charges. And then what we found out in the Judiciary Committee, Laura, with this Arctic Frost operation, this was folded into Jack Smith's criminal investigation, then, of course, into President Trump and trying to jail their chief political opponent. We've never seen anything like this in the history of our country. I don't care if you want to talk about Watergate, whatever you want to talk about. We've never seen anything like this. They were all in on going after their political opponents and throwing them in jail. It's chilling.
Folks, every day we get a better look at the bullet we dodged with the fact that Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, whoever didn't win. I can't imagine where we would be right now. Senator Schmidt had a pretty good idea after looking at the FBI's Arctic Frost operation.
What they had going on, this is Soviet-style justice. I don't know any other way to put it, and I don't use that term lightly either, but Jack Smith was brought on. People knew exactly who Jack Smith was, what he's all about. Arctic Frost is happening at the same time. The political prosecution of their chief political opponent was going on at the same time. Again, this is unprecedented in American history.
But we're not even to the most insane part yet. Oh, no. This part, by the way, missed by just about everybody this week except the Federalist, because everybody was so dug in covering the Charlie Kirk situation, understandably. But for the first time before these Senate committees, there was a big document dump this week from the FBI. We learned for the first time we've ever seen evidence that the FBI has been hiding since at least 2017 that Joe Biden, not just Hunter Biden, but Joe Biden took $5 million in bribes, allegedly from a Ukrainian operative by the name of Zlochevsky. And according to the FBI 1023, Zlochevsky has stated that he had to pay $5 million to Hunter Biden and $5 million to Joe Biden. Folks, this tracks with the IRS whistleblowers, remember, who couldn't come out till this past fall and said, no, the FBI, the IRS, we were well aware that Joe Biden took bribes. And of course, once you take a bribe, that's a crime. You can't report it on your taxes. So you've got to launder the money. We even know in these new documents that came out where the money was laundered through Latvia using 13 companies connected to Rosemont Seneca. Folks, we're getting really close here. What we are going to learn in these next 3 years is going to shock the mind. And folks, these buried landmines are going to continue to blow up in the Democrats' faces. This is going to go on for years to come. All of this stuff, all this negative stuff, normally passes away after you lose an election and people focus on other things. And they may, if the economy goes badly, they may. But folks, these bombshells go off for the Democrats every single day, or at least weekly for the major ones. By the way, part of what it was believed in the FBI documents we're just now getting, they're becoming public, that Joe Biden did for that money. Remember when he bragged about threatening to withhold that billion-dollar loan guarantee until the prosecutor who was going after his own son, but also several key Ukrainian figures, actually, by the way, tied to Putin, not tied to the Ukrainian leadership, ironically, until Shokin, it turns out, honest prosecutor, was fired. Yeah, that's part of what he got paid for, apparently. And folks, how did they bury this? Again, we'll dig into this more next week. There was a whistleblower who went to the FBI with the details of all of this. And you know what they did? They arrested the Biden. No, they arrested him to shut him up. But anyway, the documents that have come out now are indicating that essentially that the Trump administration is finding out that he was actually telling the truth when he made the mistake of going to the FBI because he believed that they were a crime enforcement operation, not just a crime operation. Insane thing number one is Mike Pence, y'all. If you've listened to me for a long time, you knew I was horrified when Donald Trump picked Mike Pence. Yeah, he's a religious guy. And yeah, I believe that part of him actually is real. But the other part is problematic. He's always been a pro-amnesty, and I mean on a mass scale amnesty, open borders zealot. Came to office with the backing of Karl Rove and the Bush cabal. I was always terrified if something happened to Trump, we'd get almost instant amnesty and lose the country. That's how scary Mike Pence is. He was never one of us. He was always one of them. And the way that politics works is that when you take these people's money, when they put you in office, you may not have to do anything for it right then, but you can almost be guaranteed that years later, you'll get that tap on the shoulder when they need you to do something unpleasant when you owe them. And Mike Pence does. You can tell he drew the short straw. They needed someone on our side to go out and say the both sides thing, to wipe away the culpability of the Democrat Party for the assassination of Charlie Kirk. After all, they're all globalists. And apparently, Mike Pence drew the short straw. And you can tell he didn't want to say this. He looks uncomfortable in the video, but he did it anyway. Gave the left-wing media the cover, the talking point from our side they desperately needed, and they ran with it. Boy, did they run with it. This was everywhere. I'm going to break it into two parts to explain what Pence is doing here.
And I also believe we need to resist the temptation to put America on trial. I mean, absent any additional evidence, one man was responsible for the assassination of Charlie Kirk. That man is now in custody, and now comes justice.
What is he saying here? One man did this, not the Democrats. Let's stop blaming the Democrats for this and pretend that they haven't been weaponizing words against us for years now. Nazi, 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 fascist, Nazi. And so what he's doing is simply saying, hey, Democrats didn't do this. This is just one crazy guy. Let's stop talking about that. Okay, then he repeats the both sides talking point.
And while with this rising tide of political violence that we've seen on both sides of the aisle, I understand the deep concern. I don't think we ever want to lose sight of the fact of personal responsibility.
What is he saying there? Well, you know, even if the Democrats did say some stuff they didn't, we're all equally guilty, so stop blaming them. Have you noticed something? When the left all week has been saying both sides, both sides, both sides, and now Pence is saying it, no one ever gives the example of the right-wing shooter from our side, because there isn't one. Pence couldn't name one, and neither can anybody else. A couple of commentators on MSNBC and CNN, and unfortunately a few misinformed people on Fox, have tried to claim that the shooter, who in June in Minnesota shot former Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband, assassinated in, you know, what authorities have described as politically motivated attack. And that same gunman also shot and wounded State Senator John Hoffman and his wife in a separate incident, have tried to claim, well, you know, he was MAGA, he was pro-choice. No, no. He was appointed by Democrat Tim Walz because he was a Democrat. And he left behind a manifesto when the police, this is a Democrat-run area, released parts of that manifesto, but not the rest. What they hid, and this is remarkable, is his rantings and ravings that what he was trying to do, he was acting, he said, again, on behalf of Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's running mate, who he wanted to see in the Senate, and he felt that he had to remove Democrat political operatives that would have stood in the way of Walz being appointed as a senator and going to the U.S. Senate and hopefully preserving his chance to be president. He believed he had planned these shootings with Tim Walz and his next target. And by the way, he reemphasized this not just in the manifesto, but also in an interview with the New York Post that the mainstream media blacked out. He emphasized this, that his next target was Senator Amy Klobuchar. He was going to eliminate her so Walz could have the seat. Not exactly a MAGA shooter. But the point remains, there aren't MAGA shooters. Just people the Democrats tell lies about. For Mike Pence to do this was disgusting. To do this to Charlie Kirk and his family, inexcusable. What would it have sounded like if, like, a real vice president who's not owned by the open borders lobby and the Bush cabal were to comment on this instead? It'd sound like this.
You talk to the shooter's mother, you talk to the shooter's father, you talk to the local district attorney, you talk to the FBI director or the deputy director of the FBI. You look at every ounce of evidence that we have, and it is clear. This is a person who grew up in a pretty normal family, actually had a pretty good home life, who was radicalized by the far left, by the social networks of the far left, by the ideas of the far left, and got so far down the path of radicalization that he killed my friend. That is not a both sides problem. My friend is dead because of left-wing political radicalization. And if you want to cut that out, then be honest about it and look yourself in the mirror.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.